The views expressed in this podcast are my personal views, not that of any government entity or government official. However, unlike some government officials, I did get the artist's permission. So kick it, Jack. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Chatting with Slim. As always, we are brought in by the sounds of the incomparable New Orleans musician Jack Locke. And today's episode, we are doing a full military comparison of the Chinese military, better known officially as the People's Democratic Republic of China, or PDRC, and the United States of America military now. 18 months ago, I did a small episode comparing both navies. This is comparing all of the forces, Air Force, Army, Navy, all aspects of warfare. Now, I did not take into account any of the new news that has come out about potential spy bases in Cuba by China. It's still, to me, he said, she said, you got bases, you don't got bases. And as well, I didn't really take into account the intelligence community that's outside of the military in doing this podcast episode. And as well, I must apologize to all my Spotify, Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast listeners, all of my listeners that partake in the streaming world only. Anchor did not give me the ability to do video for Spotify and Anchor. So the past few months, the video podcasts have gone straight to social media. And you will hear as I intro the episode that it was originally recorded for the internet only. After hearing the playback, I realized that it was palatable for all audiences and did make the decision to put it out on all platforms, not just social media. So I do hope you enjoy. Without further ado, U.S. military versus China's military. Well, hello there, Internet. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Whatever time of the day it is for you when you partake in this. It's your good buddy Slam here with another military breakdown. The side-by-side comparison that the media doesn't talk about when you're comparing the Chinese military and the U.S. military, because they like to use buzzwords and numbers, but they don't put context behind those numbers to show why those numbers don't matter as much as the ones I'm about to give you. Or the aspects of our military that people don't think about. Because I'll start everything by saying logistics wins wars. And there's a lot to be said for quality over quantity. Now, comparatively, army size-wise, personnel, the Chinese army has the advantage in numbers, but not the advantage in gear. As well, the numbers in the gear and equipment favor the U.S., other than actual bodies. Because when it comes to tanks, we have 1,000 more tanks than them, and we have better quality tanks. We also have a lot more and more advanced mobile artillery. As well, our army forces never move anywhere without their close air support. Whether that be army attack helicopters or A-10s from the Air Force. As well as any unmanned assets that might be in the area. And while that is a capability that the Chinese army probably has, it's a bit hard to tell sometimes because they are a bit secretive with all of their military information, including basic numbers. But the media also likes to tell the number of Navy ships, but they don't context that to the type of Navy ships, because that makes a huge difference in a Navy. You can have 1 million canoes with machine guns, and it won't be able to combat 90 of the most advanced Navy destroyers in the world. The U.S. Navy does not invest in small patrol craft. Everything we have in our surface fleet are all cruisers and destroyers and frigate ships that are set up in carrier battle groups. The Chinese military and the U.S. military are structured completely differently. While both have what's called combatant commands, or while China has theater commands, but China has 5 theater commands, all 5 of their theater commands, northern, eastern, western, southern, and central theater commands, are all within the borders of China. The United States of America uses unified combatant commands. We have 7 of them. We have Northern Command, Southern Command, Europe Command, Africa Command, Indo-Pacific Command, Central Command, and Space Command. Northern Command is North America, Southern Command is South America. Obviously, Europe is Europe, also encompassing Russia. Africa Command is obviously Africa. CENTCOM, Central Command, is the Middle East. And Indo-Pacific Command is everything from India all the way to Hawaii. And obviously, SpaceCom takes care of everything in orbit. And basically, what a unified command is that it gives one commander, one 4-star general or admiral, command and control over every single asset and every single body and piece of equipment from every single branch in that complete theater of operation. It is a capability that gives us worldwide coverage, whereas China's capability with it only extends within their own borders. Because let's face it, y'all, between Army Aviation, Navy Aviation, and the United States Air Force, one of the things that our military is best at is moving vast amounts of equipment to some of the most remote places in the world very, very quickly just to blow some stuff up. And we have generations of experience doing it, you know? I mean, look, y'all can... I know Afghanistan had its issues and its problems, but we moved 120,000 people in 3 days over 3,000 miles to try to assimilate them into a brand new culture. No other country on the face of the planet could even remotely do something like that. China doesn't even have that lift capacity within their own borders. And the other aspect of logistics is with their Air Force and their Navy when it comes to refueling. They barely have the capability to refuel their airplanes over their own airspace, and they barely have the ability to refuel their own naval vessels off of their own coast. Furthermore, to project that outside of their borders. Now, I must qualify that by saying that they are actively seeking to advance specifically in these two areas for that very reason, to be able to project out further. Right now, even if they invaded Taiwan tomorrow, they would still have to use 80% of their ground forces as a coordination between Army and Navy. The Chinese military, the PLA, has a Marine Corps, but it's not nearly the size of the United States Marine Corps, nor does it even remotely have the experience that the United States Marine Corps possesses, nor does it have the reputation for that matter. So let's face it, everyone. United States Marine Corps is just as old as this country. Every other country on the face of this planet follows our amphibious warfare book. We wrote the book on it. And we also wrote the book on special operations. As well as naval aviation. We've been doing it longer than anyone. And better than anyone. We've been doing it since before World War II. China didn't get their first aircraft carrier until after the fall of the Soviet Union. And while, yes, they are pumping out a lot of Navy ships recently, because they're trying to get their auxiliary fleet up so they can have refueling capability. They're trying to get large amphibious landing ships to project troops further from their shores. The key word is they're not there yet. The only problem is that we can't stand still on it. We have to constantly keep ahead. Right now we are still ahead, but we slowed down. And at times we stood still when it came to research and development, how much we wanted to put into new toys. But the simple fact that the United States military industrial complex and the five companies that comprise the bulk of it, being Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon Defense Systems, and General Dynamics, are all the five largest defense contractors in the world. With number six being BAE Systems in England. Now, when talking about naval power, there are other numbers and factors that come in more than just the number of the ships. Obviously, like I said, the type of ships. But the true measure of a naval power is its gross tonnage. And currently, because China has a lot of smaller ships, patrol crafts, ships that are meant to defend their own coast, sort of like our Coast Guard. Just for frame of reference, it's basically like our Coast Guard ships, but with missiles or missile capability to some degree. And these vessels are heavily armed for their size, but lightly armed compared to destroyers and cruisers of the United States Navy. In a true naval engagement, those patrol craft would be toast very quickly. Very, very quickly. Because about half of them are aged and outdated older Soviet units that probably belong more in a museum than on a battlefield. And yes, China is rapidly building vessels. They're building more destroyers. They're building frigates. They're building more submarines. Because they want to be able to project their navy further. Yes, they're building an aircraft carrier. Those things take time to build. We have the most experienced shipbuilders in the world over there in Newport News building aircraft carriers. They've been building them since World War II, and they are the only shipyard in this world that has produced a nuclear power aircraft carrier other than one in France. Because the Charles de Gaulle, which is France's only aircraft carrier, is the only other nuclear powered aircraft carrier in the world that's not American. Even the new aircraft carrier that China is building is going to be steam driven. Its power plant is essentially going to be an upgraded version of the one that's on their two aircraft carriers now. And that's a Soviet design. See, that's the other thing about the Chinese military. Their research and development. They have a hard time researching things on their own. They do a lot of information stealing to get the research and development part of it. But stealing information and understanding what you're stealing are two different things. So you could design it and build it if you steal the plans, but if it doesn't work, then you don't know how to fix the bugs. And we do. Because we have the engineers that can figure it out, and you don't. Because if you did have the engineers that could figure it out, you wouldn't have to steal it from us. The Navy breakdown is this. Two aircraft carriers for China. With one in building. 11 for us with one in building. We maintain a fleet of 11. So the one that is building currently, that is the USS John F. Kennedy, will actually be replacing the USS Nimitz. And the USS Nimitz will be taken out of service, as she has been in service since, I believe, the early 1970s, if not the late 1960s. Our Nimitz-class aircraft carriers, at least the first couple, have been around a while. Like I said, these things take a while to build, and they only build one at a time. These things take about 6 years to build. And once they're built, they probably take about another five or six years to run them through their sea trials, run them through their paces before the Navy actually accepts them and starts to say, we could possibly start training to deploy. And from the time you cut metal on an aircraft, on a U.S. aircraft carrier, it takes about 15 years from the first metal cut to airplanes are flying off. And flying combat air patrols on a deployment somewhere halfway around the world. These larger vessels take time. But in the smaller ship department, China does have an edge in the shipbuilding industry because they use a lot of their private sector shipbuilding to build naval vessels, as obviously everything falls under a communist regime. So when the government basically owns everything anyways, you can persuade the private sector to build your navy ships. So there's that element with China. Now, we have a decent shipbuilding industry, and it is coming back better. Our only downside right now is that after the Cold War, after the fall of the Soviet Union, we downsized that. Because for a while, other than Persian Gulf and the war on terror, we really didn't have the threats out there. We took our foot off the accelerator. We actually kind of pumped the brake a little bit. Now we're having to kind of play catch up a little bit. But we're playing catch up with companies that already have generations of experience building Navy ships. Again, I keep going back to our experience in warfighting elements that China just does not have. And it's not just the experience in combat operations. It's the experience in the logistics. It's the experience in the things that matter. When you're talking about something like a protracted combat operation in the vicinity of Taiwan, considering how much further Taiwan is from us than it is from China, that we could project as much naval power as we can alone, not including our allies. And that's another thing no one ever talks about, is all of our allies in the region. I'll get into that in just a second. But we can project within days' time, 2-3 complete aircraft carrier battle groups, as well as at least 2 amphibious readiness groups on location. And that's not including what all of our allies, Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, India, Australia, New Zealand, God, Kenya. They all have pretty good militaries too. And oh, by the way, little bitty Singapore is the third most militarized country per capita on the planet, next to the United States and Israel. But as well, no one gives credit to the Republic of China Armed Forces. And that's Taiwan's military. That is their official name. Taiwan officially goes by the Republic of China. Whereas China, if I'm not mistaken, actually goes by the People's Democratic Republic of China, PDRC. For short, if you're using acronyms. ROC for short, when officially talking about Taiwan. But Taiwan's military is 3 times better trained and 3 times better equipped than Ukraine's military. And they are confined to a smaller geographic location. And for 70 years, they've been training for a Chinese invasion. Now, if it doesn't look like I've already painted a pretty bad enough picture for China, if they decide to push the issue with Taiwan, I haven't even compared the air forces yet. Because realistically, there is no comparison. We have not only the world's largest air force, we have 3 of the top 5 air forces in the world. Let me explain. The United States Air Force is the largest singular air combat force in the world. Second largest air combat force in the world is the United States Navy. We don't have the largest air force in the world. We have the two largest air forces in the world. And Army Aviation alone by itself ranks as the, with just helicopters, ranks as the fifth largest air force in the world. And we are the only country in the world with an operational fifth generation combat fleet. And we've had that fifth generation stealth capability for well over 20 years. Any other country that has that capability still has their prototypes in testing. RF-22 Raptor pilots have been sitting for 20 years itching for a fight because all they've had to deal with is UFOs and weather balloons. And we're already developing a replacement for the Raptor. And we don't just have one stealth aircraft. We have the Raptor. We have the Lightning, the F-35, which is also being sold to other countries. Our allies, England, Japan, South Korea, know that Italy plans to buy some because they want the vertical launch and landing version. Since Italy operates a small aircraft carrier with AV-8B Harriers for their Navy, they may, actually Italy might operate a second aircraft carrier. I'm not sure. I don't know if Italy actually decommissioned the Giuseppe Garibaldi, but the Cavour, the ITS Cavour, is maybe 10 years old. Now, it's about the size of one of our flat deck amphibious landing assault ships. Japan is the one country in the Pacific that also has this capability. They have four vessels, two different classes. The Zumo class with the JNS Izumo and the JNS Kaga. They were built at probably about 10 years old now, and they've just both gone through a major refit. The flight decks have been strengthened on both of those. They were built as helicopter carriers, and the flight deck has been improved, thickened, so that it can handle F-35 Lightning vertical launch aircraft. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, our ally Japan is about to start having some aircraft carriers. Even though they're smaller, and they only, but they're using fifth generation aircraft provided by us. You're welcome, China. We also have the B-2 stealth bomber. We still have the F-117 Nighthawk in our inventory, even though it's mostly used as a trainer plane. It's pretty cool that a stealth aircraft that we literally used in the 1990s in combat when no one else had stealth aircraft is now so old in our inventory of stealth aircraft that it's used as the trainer for all pilots that are gonna fly stealth aircraft. South Korea is about to, actually, they already have two of them in service, about to get a third one, amphibious assault ships. Sort of like what we have, a flight that almost looked like a mini aircraft carrier. And they can launch hovercraft. You know, the Philippines is gearing their naval forces up. They've been buying Navy ships built in Indonesia. Indonesia's been building up their naval forces as well, as has Malaysia. Australia just signed the AUKUS with England and the United States, so by 2035, I believe, which is still a bit ways off, but by 2035, they're going to have 8 nuclear-powered submarines patrolling around their coast to replace the 6 diesel submarines they currently have. So not only do we have a lot of allies in the region that could probably almost take on China without us, without our intervention, if they all worked as a team against China, all of those allies could probably hold China back and probably even take ground, since they surround China from all sides except Russia and Mongolia, which are the China's north. And I'm pretty sure we got stuff up there in the Arctic that could probably launch stuff a long ways and hit China if we wanted to. Just saying. Subfleet. Best in the world. U.S. Navy Silent Service. Need I say more? And our capacity, again, for logistics extends to our allies. That's why we are able to project around the world, because our naval vessels are able to pull into friendly and allied ports to take on new stores and to refuel. As well, when they're out to sea, our tanker vessels can pull into those friendly ports and restock themselves and get back out to the battlefield and resupply our troops and our Navy. And that, again, is that's just a capability that China doesn't have outside their own territory that they currently have and own. And when you talk about their allies, you really can only talk about a few small countries that are basically puppet states of China anyways. Other than Russia, and they've kind of shown their ineptness with Ukraine. But the only other countries that are really there would be North Korea, possibly Mongolia, possibly Cambodia, possibly Laos, possibly Myanmar. But yeah, I mean, Myanmar has been in an extended civil war for over 50 years. I mean, Cambodia and Laos are landlocked countries surrounded by Thailand and Vietnam. So, and they don't have much of a military, either one, to speak of. As well, those countries are not very appealing vacation destinations. Then again, neither is Pyongyang, North Korea. And other than Iran in the Middle East, who's a bit away from that Pacific region to begin with, it's really North Korea. And again, they're basically a puppet state of China. I don't feel North Korea is much of a threat. They really probably couldn't even take on South Korea in a one-on-one. So, just to recap all of this. I mean, I've explained it out, but it's just simple. We have the generations of experience where it matters. We have capabilities that are needed to fight protracted extended wars far beyond your shores that no other country on the planet has. Furthermore, China. And the quality of our equipment is far superior. Now, I'm going to give you the bad news. Because there's a little bit of bad news. Like I said, we took our foot off the accelerator and kind of pumped the brake. For a while, we were standing still. Now, when it comes to shipbuilding, we're playing catch up. At least with our frigates and trying to design a new cruiser. So much so that the Navy scrapped plans for a larger vessel like a cruiser and invested more money in the Arleigh Burke, making more Arleigh Burke class destroyers because they have literally become the backbone of our naval fleet. They are literally the most capable combatant surface vessel in the world. We have 80 currently in service with another 10 to be constructed. So we're gonna have 90 of these things before it's all done. Now, granted, the first ones came into service 25, 30 years ago when I was in the Navy. But we're pretty good at making our naval vessels last for 40 to 50 years. Because the United States Department of Defense prides itself on its ability to maintain its equipment and keep it in good working order at all times, even if we ain't got to use it. And I can tell you that even sitting pierside at Naval Station Everett in Everett, Washington, where I was stationed at with the USS Paula Foster, that was our home port, if we were sitting pierside at Naval Station Everett, and the radar system, the Mark 23 target acquisition system, was not working properly sitting at the pier, I better have had it fixed yesterday. Doesn't matter if we're not leaving port for another month. Now, I'm not sure and can't speak to how the Chinese military works in that aspect. Obviously, they're better at maintaining Russian equipment than the Russians are. And they're obviously better at taking Russian equipment and improving it. But by improving it, I mean they take the tanks and the planes and they take the Russian engines out. They put their own. They take the, any electronics, radars off. They put their own systems in, which are generally carbon copied and improved versions of Russian stuff, which is why the Chinese military hasn't really technologically advanced a whole lot in 15 years. And in many aspects of research and development, we are looking at what the next thing is for every single thing that we have in our arsenal. What's the next thing? Let's start working on that now before anything we have gets outdated or too outdated. The only thing that we've fallen back on in that regard a little bit is our shipbuilding industry. If because we sort of privatized it a little bit. But the ability to be a privately owned company like Boeing, do your own research and development, and to be able to provide both equipment and airplanes to the commercial sector as well as militaries around the world. Because if you've ever flown in the United States of America, chances are you've probably flown on a Boeing to get from place to place. See, Boeing, they bought McDonnell Douglas. So Boeing manufactures the Hornet, the Super Hornet, the Growler, which is the electronic warfare version of the Super Hornet. They also manufacture the F-15E Strike Eagle, as well as they took over building the CH-47 Chinooks. Those are the large dual rotor helicopters that have become the backbone of our Army Transportation Corps helicopters. And they also build the Apache gunships, as well as the AH-6 Little Birds, which are smaller armed reconnaissance. And what they don't produce in aircraft or UAVs with their Scan Eagles, it's pretty much put out by Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman. And all three of those companies source Raytheon defense systems for all their electronics. General Dynamics' only claim to fame in aviation is the F-16 Falcon, which is now under licensed production by Lockheed Martin. In fact, the F-16V, because that's how many variants we have now. We then went past A, B, C, D. We all the way up to V with the F-16. And that enhancement is a Lockheed Martin enhancement of the F-16 Fighting Falcon, better referred to by the pilots who fly it as the Viper. Because the F-18, even though it's called the Super Hornet, the pilots that fly it call it the Rhino. Now, I don't remember what the Raptor pilots might have nicknamed the Raptor, but the F-35 has an interesting one. It's not really politically correct, but the pilots that fly the F-35 Lightning Joint Strike Fighter lovingly refer to the airplane as Fat Amy. Why? You would have to ask them. But I digress. The point is that China doesn't have the capacity for research and development like we do. Why do you think they gotta steal ours? And until they become independent in that department, they'll always lag behind. Now, I'm not saying that we would go over there and just totally wax them off the battlefield, or that their soldiers and sailors and airmen aren't very well trained, or that they don't have a lot of fight in them. I'm not saying any of that at all. But they are working with far inferior equipment, even if they have more of it than us, and far greater capabilities where it really, really matters. And that's why Xi Jinping is crazy if he thinks he's gonna take Taiwan by 2027, or have he told his military to be ready to take Taiwan by 2027. And personally, I don't think he'd be able to do it by 2037. Just saying. Now, I enjoy comments, questions, banter back and forth. Being that this is in a social media realm, available to the whole world, I'm sure there may be some fanboys out there who will come in and try to completely trash and debunk everything that I've just said. Because what I've basically done is flex the U.S. military and down the Chinese military, but that's just a product of the side-by-side comparison, no matter who's comparing it. It doesn't matter. If you want to see other comparisons, just go to YouTube. Most of them, pretty much, or at least anyone that's not biased, is going to still say the same thing that I am. Even if you think I have bias because I served in the U.S. military, I'm only using it as a springboard for my knowledge. Because the big thing is that the media, like I said in the beginning, they try to panic you, they try to give you buzzwords, they try to give you these numbers that don't really matter, but seem like they matter. And they don't really give any context. So hopefully, I have provided some context in this matter. Hopefully, the next time you see a Chinese destroyer do something stupid in international waters, you won't be panicked into thinking that World War III is about to kick off all of a sudden. Because it has become my mission with this platform to break down those stereotypes and that misinformation of what the public thinks our military does and what the public thinks their capabilities are comparative to what our military actually does and what their capabilities actually are. Because Hollywood does a good job of blurring those lines for the general public. While we all love a good war story that ends with the hero winning, there's a lot of the Hollywoodization that happens in military movies. If they showed every single second of your life in the military, 80% of the movie would be really, really, really boring. And because I think breaking down those stereotypes and misconceptions and myths, when it helps the general public understand what our military actually does, it also gives them a greater appreciation for what those men and women in uniform do every single day to make sure that you can all sleep safely in your beds at night. And really, that's my number one mission with all of this. As we have a complete military of about 1.3 active duty soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marines. And 81% of those people and their families, that's over 1 million people, really feel like the general public doesn't understand the sacrifices that they have to make to serve this country. And we need to change that. And that is what the Chad Wesleyan podcast is about. Just want to be informative and educate people without condescending them for not yet knowing something. Because to me, knowledge is power. When you don't yet know something, you can be educated. It's when you know and you choose to disregard that it becomes scary and ignorant. And even though I talk about military topics, I say this at the end of every podcast. I do not, in any way, shape, or form, advocate for war. I have trained for war, and I have fought war, and I know what war brings, and it does not bring anything good to anyone involved. It's an interesting dichotomy when you're trained to do the one thing you hope you never have to do, and that's take another human being's life. Because I don't wish that burden on anyone. But talking about our military constantly reminds me that we spend an awful lot of time worrying about war instead of peace. And I think if it were the other way around, this world might be a better place. We figure out more ways to kill each other than we ever figure out ways to live peacefully on this planet. And although once a sailor, always a sailor in my heart, my hope is that one day the world, or half of the world, will see that too. And hopefully one day there will be no need for any military by any country. Anyhow, that's my time for this episode. But please check out previous episodes and all new episodes on all your favorite streaming apps, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Anchor. The list goes on and on. As well, even though people generally don't have the attention span for it, this does get posted to social media. Because for me, it's not about charging people to see content. That's one reason why I'm not on YouTube. It's also the reason you won't hear ads. So you will hear me self-promote specific people. And from time to time, I will promote all of the great and amazing organizations, nonprofit organizations that do amazing work for our veterans and our active duty military and their families. And we all know these organizations. Well, we know some of them. We know the big ones like Wounded Warrior Project and Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Association, the American Legion, the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars. But there are a lot of mom and pop local nonprofits who have been started. And a lot of them have been started by veterans or people who were relatives of people that served. So I urge you all to go check out all of these great organizations. You can find them all in the social media realm. You can follow what they're doing. And you can even get involved yourself. We also support the many veteran-owned companies in this country. Companies like Origin and Black Rifle Coffee Company that are not only veteran-owned but give part of their proceeds back to veterans' nonprofit organizations. And I would always be remiss not to mention our lovely, lovely, lovely museum, military museum that we have here on the banks of the mighty Mississippi River in Baton Rouge with our showpiece, the World War II destroyer USS Kidd. Because I know there are a lot of people that are going to hear the sound of my voice that are in Louisiana. If you haven't been to the USS Kidd Museum in a while, you ought to go check it out. It's changed. It's improved. And it's amazing. Because I know summertime's coming up. We're already in the summer. The kids are out of school. People are going to take vacations. It's always nice, wholesome, good fun for the whole family to visit one of the many military museums throughout our great country. Now, if you listen to the podcast before, you know I don't say goodbye. I only say till next time. So until next time, y'all. Don't give in to 22 a day. Be good. But more importantly, be good to others.
Ken with Slim Podcast.